This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Are you so tired from caring that you've become tired of caring? Long-term illnesses such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases can take a heavy emotional and physical toll not only on the primary victims, but also on the family caregivers. Compassion fatigue can be overlooked because it creeps up slowly and dangerously. Today, I have Dr. John Ben Loy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist in Karl LaRoe, trainer, consultant, and coach to help us recognize its signs and how to deal with it, as well as how you gentlemen deal with it. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
I wanted to start with a question, I guess, about kindness. When we use the word compassion here, is it related directly to kindness or is it stemming from something else?
I think of compassion as kindness, certainly. But sometimes people demonstrate compassion not necessarily out of sort of a good-hearted kindness, but maybe out of guilt. So that also, you know, comes into play. I think of compassion more as behavior, not just in terms of feelings.
And what interested you in the topic, compassion fatigue, you know, to begin with?
I think it's really important, you know, as an area. And as a professional, we have to deal with it all the time. Because we are helpers. So as helpers, we also face these sort of issues. And one of the reasons why Karl is here is because this is one of his topics as well that he can speak about.
The reason I did get involved with it is because I've experienced compassion fatigue as a healthcare professional and working with a lot of traumatized people. I developed compassion fatigue over a period of time. And I actually did burn out from the profession and burned out from my work. So I had to find ways to sort of recharge my energy and develop a sense of kindness and emotional forgiveness for myself in order to be able to re-enter the work again.
Let's talk about that exact phrase then, compassion fatigue. You know, we've been using it at the start of this conversation, but we haven't quite defined it. So what is compassion fatigue? What happens when it strikes?
Well, you actually kind of said it. It's this sense of being tired from caring. And the way people experience it really is a sense of physical, emotional, mental exhaustion. And it's a result of really caring about or having empathy for somebody who is suffering. And when we are exposed to another person suffering over and over again, particularly in the case of family caregivers, when that's a loved one, they literally can sort of pick up and mirror and feel that suffering within themselves. And over a period of time, that suffering can become internalized within their own thinking, their own feeling, even physically. And that can lead to burnout. Yeah.
It's kind of like a vicarious effect.
In that you see somebody experiencing that burnout and you end up kind of not following the footsteps, but just feeling the same way, mirroring that?
It's exactly right. In fact, you used exactly the right word, mirroring. Mm. In fact, we actually have what are called mirror neurons in our brain. We are programmed to mirror the emotional responses we see in other people.
So when it comes to compassion fatigue, then, you know, Karl, you talked about that experience of burnout that you had. What did that stem from? Was it just overload? Was it, you know, a point where you were tired? I mean, what happened?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
a lot of it, when you're working with people or you're engaged with people who are suffering, it is so very, very important to learn to take care of yourself. And what happens to a lot of caregivers, both professional and family caregivers, is they get so involved in caring for the person that they're trying to help that they don't take care of their own personal needs. And over a period of time, if I don't care about myself, that compassion fatigue or that stress, it's actually compassion stress. That stress accumulates over a period of time. And if I don't learn to care for myself, then it can really begin to take sort of root inside my mind and my body. And it's progressive. It doesn't just stop at one stage. If I don't learn to address it and deal with it, it will progress from compassion stress, compassion fatigue, to burnout, even depression.
Dr. John Ben, have you experienced this yourself?
No, actually, I haven't. I'm fortunate that I went into mental health practice a bit older in my 30s. And right from the start, they warned us to do things like practice with supervision. Don't practice alone. You know, do time the amount of hours you're exposed to caregiving. So I just took it to heart right from the start. And I saw good practice in all of my work in the U.S. Being done. So I've emulated that. So whenever I do feel tired, I cut back. So, for instance, in October, I realized that it was just getting too much, too many calls, too many clients. So I said, no more new intakes. I'll be responsible for those who are existing clients. But I couldn't take in any more intakes until November. So although it is a little bit difficult to say no to people sometimes, you need to do that. And one of the reasons why I practice in teams is because then we can refer to others, yeah, where we can't, you know, provide the service.
When we are talking about caregiving in this context, I mean, you're both people who help people who are having emotional or mental blocks or, you know, just issues perhaps. But does this extend also to people who are caregiving in other ways?
Absolutely. I know family caregivers, especially for family members experiencing chronic illness, mental illness, severe persistent types. And, you know, you're stuck with a family member that you have to take care of. And that's very tiring.
So for somebody who is providing that kind of care then, you know, Carl, earlier you talked us through that progression of, you know, having stress and that leading to fatigue and so on. And you might be better placed to recognize it than somebody like me, for instance, who might just be going through the motions and feeling a little bit out of sorts, but not necessarily recognizing why. So if, you know, I am engaged in caregiving for somebody, what are the things that I should be looking out for in myself, my own behavior, my own thoughts that might be indicating fatigue?
Good question. The very first thing that I actually coach people to begin to notice is how they feel physically, because it'll show up in the body first. And it usually shows up as chronic tension, tightness, particularly around the neck and shoulders. People who are stressed literally clench those muscles in the neck and shoulders, the jaw. They start restricting their breathing. They're on edge all the time. They can get highly upset, easily frustrated. And so these are some of the early warning signs. And this is really the time to intervene, to learn methods to literally discharge, release, let go of that built-up stress that gets trapped in the nervous system, but also to begin to get support. Because what begins to happen emotionally is people begin to think, this is all on my shoulders. It's all up to me. There's no one else to help me. And that can really result in the feeling of being isolated, overburdened. And that will lead to burnout and a sense of hopelessness and helplessness. It's best to intervene early, because if it leads to burnout or leads to depression, at that point, really some professional intervention may be needed.
When it comes to things like depression, I think, you know, it can, is it, there is no one-size-fits-all way of approaching it, but is it helpful or unhelpful to tell somebody who's already a caregiver, look, you know, you have to take care of yourself because look at all these other people relying on you, because that seems to be kind of almost a self-perpetuating problem. You know, I'm burned out from caring from somebody, but you're telling me that I can't afford to be burned out because I have to continue caring. I mean, how do you take somebody through that?
Well, this is exactly what happens when I work with professional caregivers, because they're very, very good at caring for other people, but are not so good at caring for themselves. And one of the things that I do try to stress is, in order for you to be an effective caregiver, to have the energy and the enthusiasm and the concentration and all the resources that you need to do a good job, you must take care of yourself. Because when you start wearing down and burning out, you can't be a good caregiver to other people. And that's usually, they will usually begin to hear that.
I like the analogy I typically use is put on the oxygen mask for yourself first, you know, before you take care of your children. Because we want to think long term. We want to think sustainable. So when you burn out caring, you know, it limits. So maybe for some people, they cannot take care of themselves because they feel guilty. I think in family situations, I've heard again and again people who feel bad that they can take a vacation and perhaps their elderly parent or grandparent cannot. And so they don't do it. And when they don't do it, then they continue to be tired and to be burned out, which doesn't really help.
Is there a cultural component to this? I think, you know, there is a very strong thread of filial piety that runs through Asian society. And, you know, in the example that you described, for instance, you might not want to leave the country because mm-hmm. your parents cannot. You might not want mm-hmm. to move anywhere further than, you know, a 10-minute drive. There are all these elements to it. How do you persuade people, look, it really is okay, yeah. you can do this?
I have seen some cultural elements, but having worked in the West, I would say that the differentiator is more gender-based than cultural, that women struggle. More, you know, they take it on to themselves more, generally speaking. Of course, you know, apologies to men out there who are doing all the caregiving. You know, you deserve your break too. But generally speaking, women shoulder a lot of the burden and put it upon themselves, caring not just upward but downward on their children as well, and becoming what some people are now calling the sandwich generation.
That is something that I want to explore in a bit more detail after the break. We're discussing compassion fatigue today, or, you know, that feeling you get when you become tired or stressed from providing care for somebody else. And if you've got any questions, if you are caring for a family member yourself, do give us a call. That number is 0377109000. You can also drop us a text at 0162019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. This is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today, two gentlemen, Dr. John Ben Loy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist, and Carl LaRogue, trainer, consultant, and coach of Compassion Strengths. And we are discussing compassion fatigue, which is something that as counselors, as therapists, I'm sure you have to deal with fairly often, but also, you know, the average person who is perhaps involved in caregiving for their family, for their friends, that might also be something they have to cope with. We are opening up the phone lines. If you're feeling burdened by caregiving, if you just want to ask a question, get something off your mind, you can give us a call. That number is 0377109000. You can also text 0162019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, right before the break, Dr. John Ben, you talked about how there is a gender divide mm-hmm. at play. Why is that? I mean, the answer might seem obvious to some, but not to others. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
You know, these are guesswork, you know, without actual research. But I think women are socialized to caregiving to begin with. And also, you know, women also biologically determined, you know, towards relationships. Yeah, and men are not only sort of socialized towards more ambition, but you've got the hormones that create the drive and the competition and all of that. So that would, you know, be, I think, the differentiating factors.
There actually is a little bit of research that women are more empathic than men, and that actually came out of Daniel Goleman's work, Emotional Intelligence. And women do indeed, I think, sense and feel the emotions of other people a little bit more, and they can sort of take on that sense of overload, that sense of burden when those emotions are highly stressed or traumatic or suffering. So I think it's they really are kind of built more towards that sense of responsibility for other people.
But are women also better at recognizing when they might be having, you know, emotional turmoil? You know, are women, by and large, I suppose, in tune with their own feelings as well as the feelings of others? Because that's important, right, when we're talking about recognizing fatigue.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And overall, I have found that women do tend to be a little bit more in touch with their own feelings, whether it's something that they can act upon or do something about, that may be another situation. But I have found that women do tend to be a little bit more in tune with what it is they're experiencing internally.
Looking at, you know, earlier the example we gave was of family. So what are the major challenges and conflicts that can arise in a caregiver's relationship with a family member who is perhaps, who is chronically ill?
So, for example, you know, somebody who is not necessarily terminal, but going through chronic, say, Alzheimer's or dementia, the caregiver will experience all kinds of exhaustion, you know, taking care of the family member, say, a parent. There's a lot of stuff going on in the caregiver. One of the things that we've covered in a previous show called ambiguous loss, for instance, you know, leaves the caregiver in a place whereby they have the person in front of them, but not necessarily, you know, the mother that they used to know and used to love, right? So things like that, so, you know, the parent could say or demand things that are perhaps unrealistic, to what the caregiver can provide, right? So that's one, for instance. I think there will be different situations that could cause other kinds of conflicts as well.
And with that, once that starts to affect you and you experience fatigue, how might that in turn impact your relationship with the family member you're trying to care for?
Complicated.
Yes, that is complicated because when we start experiencing conflict with another person, particularly if it's somebody that we've grown up with, and think about the role reversal that's also going on. Rather than the parent being the caregiver, they are now the one being cared for. Mm-hmm. And so that whole role reversal can make it very difficult to deal with that sense of conflict with another person. So it can be quite difficult for people to adjust or readjust to the differences in roles.
Sometimes there are unresolved issues as well in the family. And let's say, you know, the mother that was so demanding on the child growing up and then suddenly become dependent, you know, on the child. And the child, who is now in her 40s, let's say, could bear and harbor ongoing resentment and then, you know, overlay that with a lot of guilt, right? So it gets tricky. It can get tricky.
We're discussing, you know, the fatigue and exhaustion that can arise from caregiving or from caring for a family member or a friend or anybody really. And if you've got any questions on that, give us a call. That number is 03-771-09000. You can also text 01620019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. I did want to kind of draw a line. Is there a difference between caring for somebody with a physical condition, you know, which would require physical care, and trying to provide care for somebody living with, for instance, depression?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Go ahead. Definitely. I would say definitely. Part of my experience has been working with families who care for people with severe and persistent mental illness. And it's a unique challenge. Whereas a person who's working with a family member who's, say, dealing with dementia or some other ongoing illness, those physical care needs are a little bit different than somebody with, say, mental health care needs. And it can be especially challenging, at least in my experience, for someone with mental health care needs.
Is it difficult for them to communicate their challenges? Because I think when you are looking at somebody who is physically compromised and you know that this person requires a certain amount of care, you look at the caregiver and you understand roughly what's involved. But when you look at somebody who has mental illness and who might appear to be having, for instance, a good day, you know, you might not be able to find that same understanding with somebody who's providing care. So how can this person reach out or try and gain some level or measure of understanding from their loved ones?
That's a very good question. And particularly with people with mental health issues, they can look the same physically, but what's going on inside of them is dramatically different. People with, say, schizophrenia or depression or some other major mental illnesses are experiencing something that People may have a very difficult time understanding because some of those experiences are a little bit outside the understanding of people who've not experienced them. I've experienced severe depression, and I know in trying to describe what that feels like to another person, it's very difficult to express, and it's even more difficult for them to understand because they don't have a basis of understanding. And so it can be real challenging because you may be living with somebody with a mental illness, but you don't really know what's going on within them.
You can't see it.
You can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And their communication to you may not be straightforward. They may be having internal experiences that you can't experience, you can't see. So it can be very challenging trying to gauge how to interact and how to work with the person with mental illness.
So, for instance, I recently had a case of a client, this case, a teen, who was very, very upset and actually thought that he might take his life. And so we intervened to make sure that he was safe. And then at some point, we, of course, had to inform the parents. And the outcome was the parents and the family members scolded him for being stupid, you know, for having such, you know, crazy thoughts and actions. So I think for people who are not experiencing the difficulties that cannot be seen, we attribute it as laziness, unwillingness,
weakness.
Difficulty, weakness, as opposed to a real, perhaps, chemical and brain disorder. And that's too bad, especially in our society in Asia.
We have a call here from Deb. Good afternoon, Deb. Your question?
Hi, yes. Good afternoon. I'm hearing the panel about the burnout of being a caretaker. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My question is, does this also lead to, instead of neck stiffen, shoulder stiffen, will lead out to ankle aching.
So you're asking about other joints, things like your ankles and
elbows,
right? Okay. Thanks for the call, Deb. Okay, so I think Deb's question was whether or not it manifests physically in other joints in other ways, because earlier we just talked about, you know, everything above the shoulders.
Actually, yes. Stress, particularly chronic stress, can manifest in a whole number of seen and unseen ways. When someone is chronically stressed, they can tense up any part of their body, whether it's the neck, the shoulders, the elbows, the ankles, the stomach. The part that's unseen, and this is probably even more concerning, is the increase in blood pressure. The actual relationship with chronic stress and cardiovascular disease. These are now pretty well known to be linked together, that chronic distress and cardiovascular disease are highly linked together. So there's both seen and unseen responses to chronic stress. Our brains produce a lot of different chemicals, such as adrenaline and noradrenaline and cortisol and some of these other chemicals that can impact us both physically, psychologically, mentally, emotionally.
If you've got any questions about compassion fatigue or about feeling tired or burnt out from caregiving, give us a call. That number is 03-771-09000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So,
yeah, I've seen in many cases, particularly with Asians, with Malaysians, locals, the technical term is psychosomatized. So meaning something's going on actually mentally, but they're not able to get in touch with it and understand it as an emotional issue. And then it turns into a bodily ailment. That happens quite a bit here in Asia. And it would be good for people to begin to touch on the emotional side of what might be going on. And talking to a counselor or therapist could help them to come to that realization. What's really important, I think, for our local audience to understand is that talk therapy can actually also lead to physical therapy sometimes, because if you're experiencing psychological relief, you will also experience muscular relief, blood pressure relief or decrease, etc. So the mind is a real thing, and it does have physical impact.
Which leads quite neatly to my next question, which was, we've talked about the importance of self-care, but we haven't kind of touched on exactly what that means. So what would you recommend then for somebody who is listening and, you know, maybe they're not even caregivers, but they are experiencing that sense of stress and burnout and they're just concerned about it. So talk therapy, of course, is an option. But what other ways can you care for yourself and try to, you know, kind of recharge or reboost?
I think different people do it in different ways. So my favorite way, for instance, is because I'm more of an introvert, then I like to be alone, where I can have very soft, gentle music on the side, good lighting, maybe even light up a couple of candles, you know, have a good temperature in the room where I can just sit and just be by myself. Sometimes even avoid social media or the internet because that can be distracting. And that for me, you know, an evening of that is very, very relaxing. Whereas for my wife, who is an extrovert, you know, she wants to have self-care. She's going out dancing. And then she comes back, she feels alive, she feels, so, you know.
And then she finds you in your quiet room. And
yes,
you guys
and, I'm happy to see her and she's happy to see me because I have my alone time and she's had her, you know, fun, you know, social time and physical time. So I think whatever it is, the gauge is, does this activity or does this non-activity make me feel better? Carl.
Yes, for me, and this is probably one of the most important things that I can share with people, is the importance of exercise. Physical exercise is really, it's been called the magic bullet. There was a recent Harvard Medical newsletter that came out that was the name of the newsletter, Exercise as the Magic Bullet. And part of the reason is we end up internalizing this stress. It's actually called energy residue, and it gets trapped in the nervous system. And we must have a way to literally release, discharge, re-energize ourselves. And exercises that are especially good at doing this are like stretching, slow walking, swimming, Tai Chi, Qigong, some of these mind-body integrative exercises where I can literally sense and feel that stress, that tension coming right out of me. It's something that I continue to practice every day. And for me, it was key to my recovery and my health.
Which, again, leads me neatly to the next question, which was that if you are suffering from compassion fatigue and you want to take this time off and try and find some way back, when do you come back? You know, when do you know that? Because, of course, you're on your own, I presume. You know, you're off self-healing. How do you know that you're ready for other people again?
Yeah. You're talking about a situation whereby the person has really had it and need to go away. Hopefully, the person doesn't get to that stage, and it's more sort of managing the stress well so that you can sustain the caregiving at inappropriate levels. But when do you come back again? It really depends. It depends on what the need is. I think for most people in that situation, it's can you stay longer? I think would be the issue, you know, because most are still burdened, you know, by guilt and by, you know,
love and obligation.
That's another one. Yeah.
As somebody who did burn out and then did come back, it took me. I had to learn to listen to myself. I had to learn to really listen to my feelings, my thoughts, my body sensations. I had to have a real sense of clearing out of all of this energy residue, all of this backlog of stress that had been inside of me. It took me literally 6 months, and I had to do intensive work with myself. And I didn't know if I was going to come back. I really didn't know. And when I begin to feel the feelings again, the compassion, the interest, the joy of providing care, the desire to want to connect with people again, then I knew it was time to come back.
Something you said, Dr. John Ben, interested me. Sustaining care at an appropriate level.
Yes.
That's interesting because I think for people like yourselves, you know, you have an understanding of what an appropriate level is because it's a professional calling. But for somebody within a family setting, what's too much? You know, how do you know when something has? How do you know what someone can or cannot ask from you? You know, especially if somebody's wholly reliant on you.
You know, just the simplest way to do it is to ask yourself a question. How well do I feel? Right? And then give yourself a scale from 0 to 10, where 0 is, you know, zero wellness. You know, everything is bad, right? And 10 is the best you can imagine, right? What? Close your eyes, kind of check with your body and just your sense, and what number comes up? I'd give myself an 8 right now. You know, that's how I feel. And people can subjectively give a number every day, you know, just that wellness index, if you will, from 0 to 10. What else would you say, Carl?
Well, I want to build on what you're saying because the basic skill here is learning to listen to myself, learning to really sense and feel what's going on inside of me. What I had to do, and it's one of my major principles for recovery, is self-honesty. I had to get really, really honest with myself. Stop pretending that I was somebody that I wasn't and that I was feeling something that I wasn't, and be honest with how I actually was feeling.
That's tough to do.
That's very tough to
do. Especially if you don't know the difference.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But that's the process of learning to go inside myself, listen to myself, allow myself to be in my own body and to listen to what my feelings and my perceptions are. It's a skill, really.
I'm curious if I could ask you a question.
Certainly.
So for those people who don't have that awareness, how could they become more aware?
Well, one of the things you said that I really like is begin to practice it. You can begin by just, it's actually called utilizing the felt sense. And it's part of focusing. And it's learning to just sit down, bring my attention inside, be open, be honest, and just ask yourself, what am I feeling right now? What's going on inside of me? What's my body saying? If my body could give me a message, what would that be? And it's learning to use this sort of intuitive sense that I believe we all have by just learning to turn the attention inward and to be as open as I can to what I'm actually experiencing.
Yeah.
And from there, hopefully understanding if a point has come where you need to reach out.
Absolutely. And it's really being able to manage that sense of I shouldn't have to reach out, that feeling like I have to take it all on my shoulders, because that's part of my self-image that maybe I really need to have a look at if I feel like this is something that I either don't deserve or something that I don't dare ask for.
I imagine also, you know, just thinking, you know, relationally that the others will also give you cues, right, in terms of what they say, hey, I think you're really burning out. Hey, you seem more irritable than normal. That's also a gauge because we all have blind spots, yeah. It's easy for me when I'm with a client in front of me, I can help them, but I'm just sort of thinking for those who don't have access necessarily to a professional.
I think especially in a caregiving setting where time is actually of the essence, you know, where a lot of your time is actually wrapped up in someone else, it can be hard, firstly, to make time to even have, you know, a quiet night sitting by yourself, much less, you know, a spare hour a day to go seek counseling or therapy.
Yes.
So with all that said then, you know, what would both your final messages be on the subject of compassion fatigue and of dealing with all its, you know, its corresponding stress and sadness and tiredness?
Hmm. Go ahead.
I think, and again, I'll sort of talk about my own journey. The most important thing that I learned was self-compassion. Because compassion fatigue often is a result of really being hard on myself, having such high expectations of myself and feeling so disappointed when I'm not able to meet those expectations and all of the mean things that I can say to myself, and really listening to my self-talk. and learning to have a sense of forgiveness and compassion for myself and acceptance of myself. So I'd say self-acceptance, self-forgiveness, self-compassion is one of the most important things a person can learn in this journey.
And I think the other thing is to realize that if you're in a situation whereby you're doing some serious caregiving all the time, that this is not quote-unquote normal, or rather accept that things are not going to be the way maybe you expect it when things are good. You know, in other words, normalize the not normal, you know, and accept that this is less than, and learn to be okay with that for this time, for this season.
Thank you both very much for coming in today. I've been speaking with Dr. John Ben-Loy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist, and Carl Leroux, trainer, consultant, and coach of Compassion Strengths. And we've been discussing compassion fatigue, both in the professional setting as well as, you know, in a personal caregiving setting. You've been listening today to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.